Welcome to Caffeinated Monsters, your bi-weekly comedy horror podcast. I'm your host, Faith, as always, and today we've got Anna from Myco and Real Horror.
Hello.
Hello again. It's been a while.
Yeah, but you've had my partner in crime recently, I think, but not me.
Yeah, I like Eve. She's lovely.
Yes, she is. She's the most pure goodness of a person ever. She's like a chocolate box person. Yeah, she's the best. And so cute. She's about that big when you meet her. She's about 3 inches tall. She wears heels to make herself look taller, but she's a pocket person.
Oh, God, I'd tower over her if I met her in person.
She's 5 foot nothing.
Yeah, I'm about 5 feet 9 and a half, so yeah, I'd be like, you're all love. Just looking down.
Well, I'm 5'4", and when we shot the film that she was in, we cast short. That's how we met her. We cast short women for Thorn, so that the monster would look bigger. We cast the women really short. And they were all 5 foot or under. I was like, I'm queen of the women. Like, it was. I'd never felt tall before. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. There's a reason I thought she'd be taller.
It's because she's got that. She's got that vibe. It's like, you know, Danny Thompson is. She's like a scream queen. A British scream queen. She does a lot of horror movies. She's a glam model and she's very larger than life personality. And then she's also 5 foot. And it's very surprising when you see her in flat shoes, like at a horror con, and you're like, hello, what are you doing down there?
Oh, God, yeah. If I was there, I'd be looking down the entire time, like, I'm getting neck strain, can someone stand on the chair for me?
The reason they come across as taller, this sounds stupid, they have to make up for it in personality, so they're like, hello, hi, like, you know, because otherwise no one will see them, people just stand on them, maybe it's that. I don't know.
Maybe after a while you get tired of just putting your hand up. It's kind of like, I'm down here, love.
Start screaming. Yeah, maybe. There you go, we're on to something.
Maybe. Yeah, all you'd hear is just a bunch of short women going, oh, hi.
Oh, dear.
But yeah, off track already. This episode is, are you talking about 1988 Beetlejuice?
Yeah.
Yeah, you recommended this one.
I did, yeah. It's the film of my... I guess it's horror. No, it is a horror film, but it's a comedy horror.
Yeah.
It's first horror love. The character of Beetlejuice is probably my first horror love. I'm still a bit in love with Michael Keaton now. I'll be honest. He was my favourite Batman back in the day. And this was the film that made me love him and Winona Ryder and Gina Davis. And still, I'm on the fence about Alec Baldwin, but yeah.
I always forget that it's Alec Baldwin, because I've always known him as being like the guy that's built like a barrel.
Yeah, he was a tiny little nerd in that film. He was like a little sort of, well, I mean, he probably wasn't, but he was also very pretty, like when he was younger, and then he sort of went a bit smarmy looking, and then he got all the smarmy looking 30 Rock style characters.
Mm. You look at him now, it's kind of like, have you just been putting too much salt in your food for like 30 years?
He's probably got gout. He lives like a king from the 1600s.
Yeah.
Nothing but fat and salt.
Oh, that just sounds unpleasant.
Yeah. Salted fat.
And then, yeah, I mean, Gina Davis and Ronald Ryder, I love those films, and they were kind of like I look back on things now and I'm like, I don't think I just like them because of the characters they portrayed, and it's like,
Yeah, Winona Ryder, I don't think he's pink. She had the limited, well, it was her and Christina Ricci had, like, were my aesthetic as a child. The kind of, there's a line in Beetlejuice where they talk about developing photos in a dark room, and she's like, my whole life is one big dark room. And I was like that as a kid. That was my...
Very melodramatic.
Dramatic, very loads of gothic everything, and full of the drama of hormonal teenage stuff, and yeah, I loved that. I still sort of love her. I find it difficult to not love her because she played that character is so iconic to me. Gina Davis still as well. Gina Davis, heard an interview with her fairly recently where she got on a plane, and one of the people who'd auditioned for what's the film called that she's in that really broke her career? Her and her best friend abscond. Why has it gone out of my head? Thelma and Louise. I Have you ever seen Thelma and Louise?
No, but I know what happens in it.
They drive off a cliff at the end. Well, they drive off the Grand Canyon at the end, not a cliff.
Yeah.
That's a bit...
No, Grand Canyon, a bit better somehow.
Yeah, calling St. Paul's Cathedral a church. Anyway, yeah, so the guy... There's like a guy in that. Is that me or you? Am I causing...
I don't know.
It stopped. Yeah, there's a character in that who is like a con man who sort of seduces Gina Davis and then steals all her money. Played by a very, very new up-and-coming actor called Brad Pitt. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's but it was like his first role and Gina Davis chose him, basically. Well, some other guys auditioned for that role and one of them was sitting on this plane and this woman said, "Oh my God, you're so lucky. Look at who you're sitting next to. You're sitting next to George Clooney. Do you know who that is?" And she said, "Does he know who I am? Do you mind? Does he know who he's sitting next to? Never mind."
Oh, the sassy comebacks, love it.
Yeah, love it. But yeah, he'd completely forgotten that he'd auditioned for it because Brad Pitt blew her away so much. He was like, and one of the other people who auditioned for that role, I've gone completely off Beetlejuice, classic me.
But, oh, it's fine.
The other one, another one who'd auditioned for it was Mark Ruffalo. And she'd forgotten kind of both of those guys, which is mental because obviously George Clooney became huge and Mark Ruffalo has probably more recently become huge. But yeah, George Clooney was like, "Do you remember me doing that scene with you, Thelma and Louise, and me never getting a call back?" And she was like, "Nope. I don't even remember you being there." Yeah, she's a bit of a goddess. I like her. But yeah, Alec Baldwin, I'm not too sure about. But Michael Keaton's still awesome.
It's funny, whenever I hear the last name Keaton, I think of Ronan Keating, the singer.
Oh, Ronan Keating, yeah.
Yeah, I keep wanting to say that name whenever I was thinking of the actor. I'm like, that's not right, is it? No.
It's dangerous to lead me off track even further. I can go down how I owned a Boyzone album. I owned two copies of the same Boyzone album, their first album. Because, I liked one song that he sung in an Irish accent and it sounded nice. So I got bought it for Christmas on about by several different people.
At least they knew what you liked.
Yeah, I didn't like them as a whole. But I've got a cat in the background just scratching stuff.
Right. Oh yeah, sorry. I love cats.
Anyway, yeah, I don't know where what do you want to talk about? Do you want me to just talk about it?
Yeah, talk about it. Talk about what was it? Not everything that's happened with it. I mean, even to this day, people love that film because of how iconic it is.
It gets like teased for sequels constantly. I think to the same extent that Bill and Ted did for years, but then obviously we got one eventually. But yeah, that character. It's the character of Beetlejuice being this sort of demonic little guy, like who haunts. Well, he's just sort of in the afterlife, and he cons newly deceased people into letting him run amok. So he advertises himself as like a get the new people out of your house sort of ghost for hire for recently deceased people. Which is such a concept, like, and the family, is it Lydia? Lydia's the daughter. I do have to remind myself of stuff because I am, have no memory. But yeah, so he calls himself a bioexorcist, which is getting rid of biological people from a ghost's house rather than the other way around, which I think is a fun flip. And one of the best things about the film is, do you know Catherine O'Hara? She plays the mum in Beetlejuice. She plays Lydia's mum.
Oh, yes, I love that one.
Makes all these works of art and stuff. Anyway, what should I just tell the story of it?
Yeah, go for it.
What think of it? I don't know if there's any specific, way you want me to do it. But yeah, anyway, so the story is Gina Davis and Alec Baldwin, when they were both young and beautiful, move into this new house. It's, you know, classic American, we're poor newlyweds and here's a giant house that's bigger than anyone could ever imagine living in, which is like an American thing. It reminds me a bit of a house in Tremors. I'm going down a whole different path, so no, focus.
It's funny. I see, when they have like houses like that in films, I do think back in the 80s, that would have been worth about, like, what, 90 grand, and people could just buy that within a few years. That house now would probably be worth at least 250,000, and you're like,
yep.
Why?
Well, my house growing up was like a four-bedroom house with an attic and stuff, and my parents bought it in, well, just before I was born, so they bought it in, like, the very, very early 80s for 27 grand.
God, I've got no chance.
I work in property. That's my day job. I'm a property lawyer. And I probably shouldn't say this. But anyway, this person who was buying a property from me, I was acting for the seller, and their parents were buying it as a present for them. A whole house as a present. A whole brand.
Do you want me to cut this bit out for you?
No, I'm only joking. I'm not name dropping.
Okay, good.
The whole house was a present. And it was £910,000. These people were in their early 20s. I was like, okay. I don't know how I can ever achieve that. I've only just got out of my early 20s, right? But apart from that, I can't see me ever getting bought a house for 910 grand. No mortgage, just cash. Insane. Anyway.
A bit impressive.
Yeah, I guess. It's impressive having rich parents. I don't know.
Oh,
depends how they make their money. But yeah, people who are mega rich don't tend to be ethical. That's my theory.
Yeah. I'll go with you on that.
Impossible to be an ethical billionaire. You must have shat on some... Sorry. You must have done some...
You can swear on here. It's fine.
Yeah, you must have done something, like, awful to another person. Anyway, so, Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis move into this beautiful house, and they are, like, unrealistically happy couple, very much in love. And then they go to the shop and buy some stuff from the market, and then on their way back, they crash the car, fall in the river, the whole car goes into the river, and they walk home all wet. Very pissed off, you know, and there's a book in their house that says the handbook for the recently deceased, and they're like, it's weird. And then I haven't watched it for a while. I was gonna watch it for this, but I thought that felt like cheating a bit. Like, I thought, like, I've got memories of it, like I, you know, you've got sort of emotional memories, and I was worried that if I watched it, I'd be like, oh, that's not actually as good as I thought it was. But I want it all in my mind as the brilliant film it is. So I might be missing bits out, but basically that's what happens. They find they can't leave their house anymore because this is probably what reminds me of Tremors. There's huge sandworms outside that try and eat them. Their house is suddenly in the middle of a desert. And they're like, this is weird because we're all wet and we just crashed into a river, so all of this stuff is strange, and it turns out they're dead. And then they go up. Oh, I can't remember. When have you last seen it? Can you remember in which order?
Yeah, they go upstairs to their attic because I think it was like, I think a wall stuck, like, pulls apart, and I think, like, they go through and see what the hell is going on.
Well, he's got a model of the entire village that they live in built in his attic, right?
Mm.
It's like a miniature version of the place they live. Or there's a miniature town anyway. And then they read the book and they draw a door on the wall with chalk, as it says in the book, in the handbook for recently deceased. And then they say some words and the door opens. I remember her drawing the outline of the door and then looking at it, and then she goes back and draws a doorknob on. And that's like, because they were just like, it's not quite right. And then the whole thing glows and just shifts aside. And then they're kind of in the afterlife. And it's sort of very bureaucratic. So they find their counsellor for kind of like someone who helps you acclimatise to being dead. And she's talking to a football team, or American football team, rugby team with hats. And she's the woman who smokes and it comes out of her neck.
Which was
gross at the time. And everybody smoked back then as well, so it was like more... Yeah. So have I missed the waiting room part out? where they're sitting in the waiting room. And
sure. I'll admit, it's been a few years since I've seen this.
Oh, there's like a green... I assume she was a girl on a fancy dress night out or something, who's dead, obviously, because she works in the afterlife. But they take a number to go and see their post-death therapist person. And she said, if I knew then what I knew now, I wouldn't have had my little accident, and held up her wrists, and she's got quite clear slit wrists, which you'd think would still be slit, because do you heal up after you die? Because other people don't heal after they die. Like, people's heads are still falling off. We've been decapitated, and there's a flat person who can go between the walls who's been squished, and he's on, like,
oh,
a...
Oh, God, I forgot about them.
Yeah. Anyway, they go back home to their house, and are like, okay, don't really know what's happening here. And that's when Michael Keaton gets their attention, and he's a tiny little Michael Keaton on a big, on the miniature city thing. And he says to them who he is, and that, you know, but he says some gross stuff about, and he's just really gross, and they leave him to it. And then it's like time passes differently for them, and a new family move into their house, which is when and stuff starts. And so this is Lydia is a sort of gothy teenager played by Winona Ryder. There's like a useless dad who's just rich but useless, a awful mum played by Catherine O'Hara, who's just incredible. She's just the best awful person ever.
Funny to think she was the mum in Home Alone.
She was the mum in Home Alone, yeah. So she's just always a terrible mum.
Yeah, but she's the stepmom, so she's kind of been that stereotype.
That is true. She is the stepmom, yeah. And who was the uncle? I want to say his name was Otto.
It was, yeah, Otto.
Otho. Glenn Shaddix. He's the voice of the mayor of Halloween in Nightmare Before Christmas.
I knew I recognised his bloody voice.
Yeah, so he's amazing, and... like, I don't know if he's her. I can't remember. I can't remember so many bits, but I didn't want to. Yeah, you don't want to, like, I don't want to tar my memory of it. But whether he's her brother or her brother-in-law or just her agent, because she's an artist, kind of. She makes terrible sculptures that are just gross and all around the house. And so they've turned this lovely little quaint cutesy mansion, sorry, cottage or whatever it's supposed to be, into this sort of yuppies dream, kind of, with terrible artwork everywhere, and they're all obnoxious and gross. And Lydia, Winona Ryder, her character, is this gothy teenager who is just writing poetry and depressed about everything, and very much me as a not real depression, like fake depression where you listen to too much Green Day. That one.
Oh, God.
No offense, Green Day, I love you. Anyway.
Do you want me to talk about real depression?
I just, is it Green Day who did Lonely Day? The most lonely, it's a terrible grammar. It's like almost as bad a grammar as Female of the Species, but I love that as well. Female of
my life. Yeah, I think it was Green Day.
The most loneliest day of my life. That one, mm-hmm. Yeah. Put that out for the benefit of anyone who listens to terrible singing. Yeah, so anyway, she's all gothy and she wants to get away from her family, and so she goes upstairs and she sees the little model town, and then she meets the Gina Davis and Alec Baldwin, who have names that aren't that. Let me just check what they are, because I can't just keep calling them Gina Davis and Alec Baldwin.
I don't think, like, how...
Adam and Barb are called.
Is it because that she's so interested in, like, gothic culture that she can see them? Because no one else can.
She says that it's because, so they're like, why can you see us but no one else can? Because she sees them at the window as they're moving in.
Mm.
And she says that in the handbook it said something like they can only be seen by the strange. It's a strange and unusual thing. And she says, and I myself am strange.
I'm strange and unusual.
Yeah. Because she's so dramatic, I love her so much. And she's constantly writing a suicide note as well, like, which is so dark, but like, it's so teenage that she's just like, She's sitting up when they meet her. She's sitting up there like crying, going like writing a basically a suicide note. It's so dark, really. But it is funny because she's just being a teenager.
Teenage angst. I don't miss it.
I think I wasn't as bad as some of my friends. I remember my friend cutting herself, but not in the actual way that people did for actual mental illness purposes. She did it in class with a compass, like in front of people, and gave herself a scratch, which would no doubt heal. And she said, "The pain makes me feel alive." I was like,
"Yeah, love. I think we've got a school counsellor if you need to talk to someone."
Like it was just performative, you know. But that's how it was, especially in the '80s. I think '90s.
Oh yeah,
it was shock and awe, kind of. Anyway, and nobody knew how to treat any kind of mental illness then. Anyway, that's what Lydia is doing, and so yeah, able to meet these people who are much more her sort of people. They're a nice couple who are like worried about her because she's obviously quite depressed. And then, so she's like sort of made these friends. Anyway, the Dietzes, that Lydia's family, start getting more and more irritating to the Maitlands, which Adam and Barbara, not Gina and Alec, Adam, Barbara, Maitland. And then they get warned not to speak to Beetlejuice because he's naughty and he causes more problems than he solves, and he's a kind of demonic creature that if you say his name three times, he's only out for himself, even if he promises to do stuff for you and all of that. It's a monkey's paw kind of thing. You can have your wish, but you'd rather you didn't.
Yeah, anyway, it's like a Wishmaster situation. If you make a wish, like, it will go horribly wrong for you.
Yeah, well, exactly. One that feeds on wishes. That's my favourite line from Wishmaster. Anyway, because he says it really weird. One that feeds on wishes. Terrifying.
I love this character though. I've got the trilogy box set at home. But yeah, but I think he's such an iconic character because of his design. But when you watch the films back to back, you do notice that there's a lot of like, there's a few bits that are kind of like, but that wasn't in the previous film. Why have you changed the lore?
Is Wishmaster the one where he ends up in? Is it in the third one where he ends up in prison and he's trying to get people to wish? And there's like a prison guard or something who ends up in a glass window.
Yeah, that was the security guard. And yeah. I think that was in the first one that would happen. Because in the prison one, it's someone is in the jail cell where it says, "But I wish to go through these bars and walk out that door." He just forced him through the bars and crushes him.
Yeah. Is the third one the one where they have a party? And
it's still the first one.
Really?
Yeah.
The one where there's Tony Todd there and just everyone from every horror film ever is at this party randomly.
Yeah.
They could obviously afford a few slips. Is that still the first one?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. I really like the first one. Anyway, so, like, clearly, maybe I haven't watched the other two then. Maybe I've just watched that.
I'll let you borrow the box set if you want.
No, we've got.
Can you have left?
Yeah, my husband's very into all of that. Right, so keep my brain on track. I'm doing it. I'm going to stay on track till the end. So they get very annoyed and they're like, "We want a bioexorcist." So they go to their counsellor and she teaches them how to make funny faces and try and scare people. So they try that, but no one can see them and they can't do anything. Are you picking that up in the background?
A little bit, but it's fine.
I can shut the door. Hopefully he'll sort himself out. They go to their counsellor and it doesn't really help. They it would be something they would need to practice at and get good at and, like, basically haunting people out of your house. And then Beetlejuice again says, like, "I can help. You just have to, you know what you have to do." And this is why I got confused when I sent you the name of the film, is that his name is Beetlejuice, spelt like the planet that Zaphod Beeblebrox is from in The Hitchhikers. Hmm. He's from a planet called Beetlejuice, which is spelt Beetlejuice, like is it G-U-E-S-E at the end, or G?
Yeah, I think so.
And that's what the character's name is. But when he shows her how to spell it or how to pronounce it, he shows her a big, he shows her, because he can't tell her his name. He has it on flyers and everything. But obviously it says Beetle Geese or whatever, however she would have pronounced it. So he shows, he creates things. So he creates like a giant cockroach that's there with a fag and a paper. Goes, hello. She's like, ah, beetle. And then some orange juice is being poured midair for the juice bit, and then she gets it, and then he goes like, and then she says Beetlejuice, 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 and there he is, and he starts terrorizing the Dietz family, starting with they're having a dinner party, and they're eating some kind of lobster, or this is probably the most famous scene of some kind of lobster or prawn meal, and then the song Deo starts, and they all, against their will, start singing and dancing to Deo, and all of the like the lobstery prawn things, which is definitely people with their weird lobstery prawn glove hands coming up out of the table. I love a practical effect. But they, like, get their hands, like, hooked into the soup that they're eating, and they're all accidentally singing Deo. Oh, no, that's what they do themselves, isn't it? I've got this... But sorry. That was their attempt at scaring them. I am getting it muddled, but anyway... Beetlejuice then takes over scaring them, and things like the banister turns into a snake, and then he brings all of the mum's weird sculptures to life, and they start like basically trying to kill everyone, which is like obviously a bit further what Adam and Barbara wanted to do was scare them, but what's happening is they get a sort of being killed, essentially. That seems to be what's going to happen. It is so dark when I think back. And it gets weirder.
It's funny when you look back on films like that, but it's kind of like, oh, you remember like the iconic scenes, and then you remember how dark certain bits were. And it's like, it's funny how our minds just skimmed over that.
Yeah, because I was, well, I mean, in 1988, I don't remember how old I was, because I was quite young. So I mustn't have watched it then. Five. Well, I think I watched it in the 90s. So, like, yeah, your brain just doesn't, anyway. So they think... any minute now, they're going to come running out of the house and screaming and terrified and all this stuff. But that's not what happens. And then they, like, Lydia's been telling them this whole time that there's monsters, that there's ghosts in the attic. And now they finally believe her. And they have Otho create, like, a ceremony and her wedding dress and his wedding suit and put them on the table and sort of, like, do a kind of incantation to bring them back into their bodies, back into their sort of corporeal, but they're slowly so they come back as themselves, but then they slowly decay because obviously they're dead. So as they start decaying, Lydia says to Beetlejuice that basically help they're dying, and he's like, I have to say my name, you know, like he's going, you know what to do. So she says, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. And he saves them and then insists on this teenage girl marrying him. To what end? I'm not sure. But at one point he does, like, when he's a snakehead monster, he does, like, lift up her skirt a bit. It's all a bit... now. Anyway.
Yeah, it's funny how hindsight works.
They're at the altar, and then into getting back into... sort of his little prison, they have to say his name again three times. So every time someone starts saying his name, like Gina Davis comes running in and she says it, and a zip appears on her face, zipping her mouth up. So she unzips that and says Beetlejuice, and then a steel thing.
Steel plate just smacks on her face.
I mean, Lydia's dress in that scene, can I just say, is what a dress I've always wanted, like a red wedding dress, that's short, like an almost November Rain dress, but red. Anyway, I'll now get onto Guns N' Roses, so I have to realign. Yeah, so I don't fully remember, like, I mean, someone eventually manages to say his name three times. He goes back, and Lydia and the Dietzes and the Maitlands are like, oh, phew, you know, you're okay, and you don't have to marry a weird goblin from on the Vale and all of that stuff. Now, can you remember why she ends up living on her own with ghosts at the end?
I thought the parents were still in the house with her.
Oh, are they? Are they all living together? Oh, they are, aren't they? Of course.
Yeah, they're kind of like, they realise, right, we can work this out, we can sort something out for this one.
We just need to be less obnoxious. I think the uncle Otho is chased away or something. I think because he ends up running away in just his giant underwear. He's wearing like a sort of white all-in-one long john malarkey, and he runs away. And then, so they decide to just basically treat Lydia better, and she comes home, and this is how it ends. So we see Beetlejuice in the waiting room next to a shrunken-headed guy, and first he's sitting either side of some very shapely legs and an attractive torso on either side of him, and he puts his hand on the leg and gets slapped by the top half on the other side. So he moves and is sitting next to a shrunken-headed guy, and to his other side is like a can't remember what they used to be called, but like a female shaman, like a witch doctor kind of. There was a word
for
it once, but I can't remember. Anyway, and he sees that the number just called is 5 or something. Her number is 6, and his is like 6,987,000 or something. He's got this great big long ticket for next in the queue, so he's obviously going to be there a while. And he distracts her, takes her ticket, and then she shrinks his head with her magic
powder. Dust or something.
So that's what happens to him. And then Lydia comes home from school, and they're like, you know, how did you do on your test? And she's just looking coyly, and Adam's like, we've studied so hard, you're kidding me, like, what happened? And she said, I got an A, so now can we? And they're like, oh, okay. And then they rise her up into the air as she sings Jump in the Line, or mimes Jump in the Line, along with all of the American footballers
on the stairwell, just dancing along,
flying above the stairs. Jump on the line, rock your body on time. Okay, I believe you. And then they're all having a dance and a sing. And the music, is some of my favourite stuff about Beetlejuice anyway, but that sort of, that ending is great. It's like sort of the opposite of all the haunting things you see. One, it's the ghosts that want the people out of their house, and you see it from their perspective, rather than having exorcists come in and try and get ghosts out of a house. It's the other way around. And you can understand that, like, you can understand. They live in that house. They can't go anywhere else. Why should they live with obnoxious people? And the sort of temptation to use this dodgy guy to do it quickly but unethically. And then they decide they can all live in harmony and sing whilst floating above the stairs. The end. That's my elevator pitch for Beetlejuice. A really long elevator ride.
I like that film a lot. I mean, the fact that they've actually taken it seriously and talked about doing a sequel.
Yeah, I hope they do. As long as it's got Michael Keaton in it, I'm happy.
I think he's going to be on board.
Yeah, I would have thought. He's had a bit of a resurgence with After Birdman, I think. Vulture, wasn't he?
I think so.
And then he's coming back as Batman, I think. It's like an older version of Batman.
Oh yeah, that's what I remember now. It was like a trailer that was released recently, wasn't it? It was like a tease or something. He puts a mask on, and he's like, "I am the Batman," and it's like, "Yes, yes, you are."
Yes, he is. And he's from the era of Dayglow Batman villains and just really over the top Gotham. It's like superhero films should be fun, DC. Okay. Just enjoy it.
They should be fun. They shouldn't be about like politics or, you know, half the fucking universe trying to destroy the place. No, just keep it to like a local area where it's just a couple of bad guys with really bad catchphrases doing dumb shit.
I get that politics is always rife in comic books. It always has been. Captain America is hugely political just as a character, but it's supposed to be subtext, not like slammed in your face. Or not to the extent that it makes things boring. It's like Star Wars has loads of politics, but it also has loads of fighting and lightsabers. Star Trek has just politics. That's just the bits without the fighting. Everyone's going, according to the accords of X, Y, and Z, we are not allowed to go over there and go and have an exciting fight with all those alien species, and we have to go and sit over here and have coffee and a boring chat. Sorry. If people like Star Trek. But yeah, that's the make it fun. Enjoy yourself.
Stop adding conspiracy theories to everything as well. It just gets a bit much, I thought.
Yeah, it does. It does. But DC, I think, are particularly morose. I think I'm hoping that with more James Gunn influence, they might cheer up. See, Guardians is fun.
I like Guardians of the Galaxy, but I'm a bit funny about Chris Pratt nowadays.
Yeah, what a Chris Pratt.
Pratt.
He doesn't deserve to be Star-Lord. He just doesn't. And it winds me up that he is now. Yeah, I'm with you. What can we do? Petition. He's a really good friend of James Gunn's, isn't he? So he casts all his friends. I didn't particularly love Suicide Squad, the Suicide Squad. It was better than the first one, but still, I didn't like Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn. I just think she plays it too dumb. So hopefully Lady Gaga will do a better Joker too. But I don't know. Pair up, but don't make intelligent female characters stupid.
Yeah.
That's my...
I like in the Suicide Squad reboot that she was more of a... She dressed more for the character of like combat and things, whereas in the first one it was a bit like, oh, no. Who the hell's going to fight in those boots kind of thing?
Honestly, my favourite bit from the Suicide Squad is Harley's escape from prison. She's like in a big red dress and she kicks her way out of a building. And that's way more Harley Quinn, but she is also a very intelligent psychiatrist with like a ton of neurological problems. Like,
yeah.
And she's crazier than the Joker. She's more sadistic than the Joker. Like, she's, in order to, because she's so obsessed with him, in order to prove herself to him, she's worse than he is. He's not an idiot. She's clever about it. And I think she should be played by Kaylee Cuoco. Anyway, and she did the voice animated one.
I hope at some point, like the animated series, when they've done the Harley Quinn dating Poison Ivy, I want to see that on the screen, not just as an animated series or in comic book form. Honestly, right. It's been a film.
Yeah, well, that's what Birds of Prey should have been, really. Is that there's because in the Birds of Prey comics, there is a, I don't think it's Poison Ivy, I think it's Batgirl or someone that she's got a thing. Is it? No, maybe not Batgirl, can't remember, but she's got like it's a bit more of a healthy relationship than the, I mean, none of her relationships are very healthy, and they're all with like the supervillains. But yeah, the relationship between her and Poison Ivy in the cartoon is lovely, and you think that would be really interesting. Like, yeah, no, it feels like it's either for the male gaze or not at all. You just want to flick them in the face. We'll do our
somewhere else. So stop trying to film with that.
Yeah, we'll make our own fan film.
Exactly. Yeah, that would actually be a lot of fun. Oh, the practical effects.
Good. It would be fun. Yeah, it's it would be a good laugh. Practical effects are one of the most fun part of making films. But yeah, So hopefully we're going back to Tim Burton-style Batman.
I hope so. I actually enjoyed that.
Outrageous. And Michael Keaton's Batman. And everybody cheers up. Fix the DC Universe. Welcome.
Just make it a bit more cheerful and a little less. Yeah, talking about the ins and outs and being and betraying each other on different levels. And it's just like, just make it enjoyable.
Yeah. I think the Marvel TV shows do really well. Jessica Jones I dyed my hair black. I love Jessica Jones. I instantly dyed my hair black. Doesn't suit me at all because I'm not her. But yeah, like I could watch that over and over and over again. Especially the first series with David Tennant, as like he's such a good actor, and it was just there was an arc and it was fine and like she was flawed but brilliant and yeah, like come on, it's just. Properly.
It's like, do it properly and stop trying to make it sexy.
Yeah, like stop trying to sexualize. There's loads of characters who that's their thing. Their thing is that they're sexy. But like, don't do it to characters who leave them alone. I liked Miss Marvel for that. Not Miss Marvel, I don't mean Miss Marvel, I mean Captain Marvel. But also Ms. Marvel was a good TV show. But yeah, Miss Captain Marvel. Have you seen Scott Pilgrim, I assume?
Yes, I have, yeah.
So, Envy Adams was my thing, like, from that film. everybody else was like Ramona Flowers, and I was like, no. Like, I like everything about Envy in that film. I think she's brilliant. And then obviously she's then Captain Marvel, so she's my favourite everything. That's my archetypal superhero film with a girl in it, where she's just wearing her Captain Marvel suit. She's wearing military stuff, and then she's in the 90s, so she puts on basically grunge clothes, and then she changes into her Captain Marvel outfit, and all she does is just be the most powerful thing in the universe. And she beats up Jude Law, Britain's most ridiculous law. Anyway, yeah, that's Beetlejuice, apparently.
Yeah, Beetlejuice and the DC, and not really in the Marvel universe, but more DC.
Yeah, I'm much more of a Marvel universe person, but I'd like Harley Quinn is a great character. Let's just do her properly and not skimp on her, because she's complex and interesting, and yeah, let's lean into that a bit more.
So I'd give her appropriate outfits and shoe wear, and
yeah,
let her say her intelligence.
Yeah, because she's clever, like, she just is. And there's, I mean, like Enchantress in Suicide, first Suicide Squad. So she's what? She is my visual sort of inspiration for Witch Trial. So when the we're in the film we're making, where the final sort of form of the woman, I want to be similar to Enchantress in that film, which is all sort of black smoke coming off a sort of slightly kind of voodoo looking, but without cultural appropriation, and sort of like ethereal goddess, but evil. And she is, that is her thing, is that she is captivating. Like, you look at her and you go, can't look at anything else, and that's Enchantress's thing. She's an enchantress. That's the whole thing. Like, so that's sort of, that's not Harley Quinn. That's not just boil everyone down to nice to look at, because it's boring, apart from being inappropriate, and it's tiring.
When you're sitting there, it's like, I paid to see this, not watch someone's arse on the screen.
It's just like, and you think, I'm just bored of women's character being summed up by what they're wearing, or like, it's just boring. And I like it when they've just, like, if you could interchange that man with a woman, and it wouldn't make any difference, you know. Anyway, I'll shut up now.
Yeah, enough about objectification.
Yeah, like, I don't have problem with sort of like attractive characters being attractive, and that's part of the storyline because of reasons like that. And that makes sense, you know. Someone is beautiful, and so somebody else does something, and that causes them to do something, but that isn't the reason. That it's not because Harley is, she is supposed to be beautiful, I think, but that's in comic books. All women are supposed to be beautiful, unless they're evil.
Yeah, can bend like a Stretch, yeah. Armstrong,
and then incredibly, incredibly strong, but also skinny, like that's Wonder Woman. Which ironically, she is incredibly strong and used to be in the military and stuff, but like, like, she's not, she doesn't look Amazonian. She looks like modern day person. I don't know what to say, really. She's not like, you think of more like female wrestler, Ronda Rousey, female wrestlers, female boxers, as being that kind of strong and like Amazonian, like big muscle and beautiful, like, it just in a different way. Anyway, I could go on about this forever, and this is why we started a production company. I'm sure you've spoken to Eve about this.
Yeah.
She's much less shouty than me.
Oh, trust me, we kept going off track as well. It's really funny.
Anyway, sorry. I'm going to make your episode run forever.
Oh, it's fine. It's nice having a chat about random stuff, though. It's kind of like, yes, yeah, finally, someone I can talk to about this.
Yeah. Because as well, when we go to film festivals a lot, we're in the horror genre, and it's 90% male. And like, which is fine. Like, I almost like men as much as women. They're almost equal to us, and that's great for them. I'm joking, obviously. All equal. But there's a subset of them who are gross, and they just want, they basically want to pay actresses be on set to do stuff that they would have to pay a lot more and to do it for the reasons they actually want it done. You know what I mean? You think you're paying someone like say 200 quid a day to walk around their house in your underwear. Not your underwear, their underwear. That would be even weirder. Anyway, You just think it's very obvious that your main like drive is getting naked women in your house or near you at least so you can tell them what to do, and it's awful. It's just the, you know, I mean,
just red flags everywhere.
And the sort of jokes and the banter and stuff, you just think, and then yeah, I get oh, you're so boring, you know, if I'm not going along with it, I'm like I'm too old for that to work on me. Like, I don't care if I'm boring to you. You're a strange old man. But yeah, it can get a bit exhausting not having allies. Although my husband is a huge ally, and that this has always been his ethos. So we're just sort of falling off the back of what he's done. He's always tried to make sets safe and comfortable and sort of build characters with the actress. But sometimes actresses want to play a sexy character because they feel like it that day, which is, that's also fine. But if they're sort of being pushed into doing things that are outside of their comfort zone, it's just like, that's a slippery slope. I'll get off myself.
It's gross.
It's gross, and it's, you're never going to get the best work out of them. Like, trying to appeal to sort of sensible, just sort of business-like mind of these people. You're not, if people feel scared and uncomfortable, or like they're constantly going through their mind, if I had to, how would I get out of this situation alive? Which is, I mean, as not just women, like people, trans people, or like people in the LGBT community in general. Like, you can get in a situation where you think, I don't know how I'm going to get out of this, and you're having to assess everything, and like, that's not how you get good, relaxed performance out of someone. That's not how you get them to go that extra mile and go, oh, can I just try this? This might be really good for the character. They're just thinking about how they can get out of there safely. That's upsetting.
Yeah, I mean, even for me, on a some kind of conscious level, if I go somewhere, I look out for the exits.
Yeah.
Straight away, and I'm like, this shouldn't be a thing. Like, this shouldn't be something that's like ingrained into me.
Yeah. I mean, even I talk about a lot of true crime, and thankfully the narrative has changed a lot over the years, but like, most violence is carried out by men. Most violence is carried out to other men, so men should be most upset about this. I don't know why they're not more upset, because they just keep hurting each other all the time. Like, to the rest of us who aren't men, they can be dangerous, and we don't know, they don't wear signs on their heads saying which one's which. So them being a bit offended that we're tarring them with the same brush, I don't think that's more important than people being alive.
Exactly. It's like if someone put three glasses of water in front of you and one of them had poison in it, it's like,
one of them's poison.
Yeah, it's kind of like, well, one of you is going to kill me, the other two, I've no idea. Like, can't tell which one's fine until, like, something happens.
Yeah, which is the exact analogy. Like, it's very frustrating. I'm not being very funny right now, sorry.
Oh, it's fine.
But it's hard to get that message across that, like, yes, okay, so maybe you don't routinely murder women, which is great, you keep that up. But if you make them, are you aware whether you're making them feel uncomfortable? Because, I mean, most people get killed by a man that they know. The biggest killer of pregnant women is men. It's the number one thing that kills pregnant women, which is terrifying. There's so many other things that can complicate a pregnant... Anyway.
Yeah.
Just be aware of that your feelings aren't more important than someone's life, I guess. I would say to men. Ah, sends the lesson.
Yes, it's kind of like, don't let your ego get in the way.
Yeah. Think about other people's feelings and how uncomfortable they might be. Think about, oh, well, I'm not uncomfortable. Like, what? Yeah, why is that? Because it's you, is the problem. Yeah. But anyway, hopefully that's all changing.
Slowly, yeah. It's getting there.
It is. It's better than it was.
But yes, Beetlejuice.
And that all wraps up Beetlejuice for a reason. Yes. I don't know.
But yeah. I mean, I love Beetlejuice as a film because it's just kind of like, it's the characters that are involved, like the colour schemes.
Yeah.
Is it claymation they do for a lot of things as well?
Yeah, for the snake on the stairs and the artwork that comes to life is all claymation. And I like that. I like practical stuff.
So you don't see claymation on a lot of things these days, I think, because it just takes so long to do.
It does. I think closest to it that I watch is The Clangers. I watched that with my son.
Oh, God.
It's sort of model work. You can see the thumb and finger depressions in the Clangers because they still do it like that. I don't think it's animated. Yeah. It's a shame.
Is it still going then?
Yeah.
It's
narrated by a beetle. No, not a beetle. A Monty Python. Honestly. My head's going Eric Idle. It's not Eric Idle. It's not. It's just not. It's the other one. It's not John Cleese. Not Eric Idle. Let's run through them. It's the most obvious one. Anna! I cannot pluck information out of my head. I'm going to scream it.
I do that as well. It's like, I can see this person's face, but I can't remember your name.
Yeah. Michael Palin. That's who it's.
There you go.
Good. I can die happy. Remember Michael.
She can remember the narrator for The Clangers.
Yeah, that's all I need. Yeah, no, it's a beetle that narrates Thomas the Tank Engine. Ringo Starr narrates Thomas the Tank Engine. We used to. Here you go. Up to there. It's Beetlejuice.
I do have to commemorate the comment on the scare tactics that dead couple tried to do. Like,
yeah.
Gina Davis in the closet like rips her face off and her eyes pop out and they're like, yeah, can't find what's in here, and close the door.
Yeah.
Off.
Yeah, and he pulls his face into like a duck beak. He puts his eyeballs on his fingers, and then he does that, and he's got eyeballs on all of his fingers.
Oh yeah, and she pulls her jaw open and like makes like a giant.
And her eyeballs come into her mouth. Is that right?
Yes, that's the one.
I need to find a picture. Yeah, it's brilliant. It's just brilliant.
Oh, just the bit where Beetlejuice is on like the tiny little what's it called? Not a diorama.
The model village thing.
Yes, that's the one. Where
I can't remember what they're called.
I bet someone's out there like, I've got to tell you called this. Beetlejuice like kicks a tree and apparently he wasn't meant to fall over, but because he hit it that hard, it fell over and he just kind of goes, oh, and they kept it in.
I can see that. I think there was some bits he ad-libbed as well that were kept in. His makeup was just great. His suit was great. Like, yeah, I just love him. I love that film. It's just great. I think they could have, is it Jenna Ortez, the one who's playing the new Wednesday? She can go and be the new Lydia.
They've actually announced that they've cast her in it.
Oh, have they?
In the sequel, like they've announced like a cast in it.
I don't really believe them half the time. Beetlejuice 2. See, I've not had time to really. Oh, so they have. Beetlejuice 2, cast. So Winona Ryder's in it, Gina Davis is in it, Johnny Depp. Mm. I think Barbara, because, oh yeah, of course she was in Schitt's Creek. Did you watch that?
No, I don't.
Very good. It's very funny. Yeah, Jenna Ortega. Oh, cool. I mean, she's kind of perfect for it, isn't she?
Hmm. I just hope they do it justice. Like, I don't want them to end up making, instead of doing practical effects, they end up doing a bunch of CGI. I'm hoping that they stick with either like claymation or just normal practical effects for it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're more likely to get that with horror. So she's just rumoured at the moment. The only confirmed cast is Michael Keane. IMDb is all I trust. Once it's on IMDb, you can't get it off. Old Michael Keane. Anyway.
Yeah. I love how iconic it's become, like the amount of people that dress up as the main characters. Like if you go to the pub on Halloween, the amount of people dressed as Beetlejuice is ridiculous. And
me. I dress as Beetlejuice quite often.
I just like the fact that there's like a musical and all sorts, and it's just kind of like, I just love it.
Yeah, I do. I love it. It's funny and it's got horror-y bits in it. I mean, a lot of it is horrendously dark. Now you look back, teenage sort of self-harm and suicide kind of connotations, and a dirty old ghost man trying to marry a teenage girl. It's all, I don't know.
I did look up, actually, the reason why he wants to marry Lydia is because if he marries a human, he can wreak havoc on like the living a lot more easier, because he can't be stopped then.
Yeah, he's marrying into the mortal world.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's so scary. She suddenly looks so young and like a little baby, and he's like this horrible man, except he's wonderful and one of my favourite characters of all time. What a creation he is. Yeah, I can't wait to see Michael Keaton back as Beetlejuice. That's just incredible.
Yeah, Beetlejuice and Batman.
Batman at the same time in the same film. We should get back on this for Beetlejuice 2 when it comes out.
Oh yes, definitely. I'd love that.
Yeah, we can do a full spoiler review. Or
great.
A watch party with Beetlejuice and then go and watch Beetlejuice 2 at the cinema. Mm.
That's an idea.
There you go. Plans, we have them.
Okay. Do you have any more thoughts on the movie?
No, I think I've unloaded them onto you over the last hour and a half. Yeah, I love it. It's hot. It's sort of heartwarming, funny, and it's got lots of character development in it. It's got some 1980s problems, but that's all right. I can forgive. I'm from the 1980s, so I get it. I've got quite a lot of 1980s problems. Like you say, the practical effects stuff was brilliant. The actors are amazing. It's all very well cast. Love it. I keep remembering other little bits of it. The sort of comic book feel of it when you get past they go through the door into sort of the afterlife, where some of the corridors get smaller and smaller, sort of almost Alice in Wonderland-y. And there's like the Room of Lost Souls. I don't think we mentioned that, where there's just a load of souls drifting around who can't find anywhere to be, and there's just random doors they open. You don't see what's in there, but things scream, the hair blows back, and there's light. And you just think it's a good place for your imagination to go nuts. And I think the whole concept's funny, that it's sort of this incredible bureaucracy after you die, and there's people out there to shift, you know, try and put one over on you. Even once you're dead, there's no getting past it. Love it.
Even in the afterlife, there's con men.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that takes us back to men being just rubbish. Hashtag not all men.
Yes. So guys, like, yeah, not all of them, but some of them.
Doesn't really help us. Anyway, yeah, no, I think that's the end of my thoughts. I think I've given you all of the thoughts that were in my head. Never mind just on Beetlejuice, so.
Same. Yeah, I mean, it's very it looks like they had fun making it, like the actors actually enjoyed themselves.
Yeah, they seem like people who are nice to work with as well, because Gina Davis was a superstar at the time. She was like one of the biggest stars ever. I don't know if I've ever heard anything bad about her. She seems fine. Alec Baldwin was probably fine then. He's sort of Hollywood royalty, isn't he?
Yeah, but it's nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, what did Batman say in one of the more modern ones about you either die young or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain?
Yeah. What has Gina Davis been in recently? I haven't seen her in anything in a long time.
No, but she made quite a lot of money, and then she had a family, I think. No. What is Gina Davis up to these days? I saw her being interviewed on something, so I think she must be doing stuff. I don't know.
Oh yeah, a little bit of an info drop. MK Horror, I think, are considering doing Beetlejuice as a
oh cool.
What was it, like a public viewing thing, either MK Gallery or
at the Crawford Arms.
Yeah,
yeah. You just cut out then. Yeah, I mean, I didn't even know about it, which says a lot, doesn't it? That I've lived in MK for 9 years and I'm very into horror, and I didn't know. So. I'm up for that. Babysitter's dependent.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I can escape, leave Mike to it. Yeah, that'd be good. We could make, we could do what put our Birds of Prey fan film on for Beetlejuice.
Yes. Yes, that would be good, yeah.
Okay. I'll get writing. Gina Davis was in Glow. Did you watch that?
Glow. Oh, the female wrestling thing that was on Netflix. I never got round to it.
Oh, it's good. It's good. There's some really good people in it. Yeah. It's quite dark, but it's good. I like it. Mm. The Glorious Ladies of Wrestling. I think it's semi-biographical or something. I think something happened that was a bit like that. Anyway, that's good. But I don't remember being in it. It might be in a more recent series that I've not seen. Because at the moment, I'm watching You, a show called You, not You. I'm not standing out. Okay, good.
You see it going through the letterbox, it was like, five.
Which is, I mean, it was already quite a good show. And I know that some people don't like it because of its subject matter. But, I mean, it's a horror show. But it's just turned into, it's phenomenal. It's so good. And I don't get much time to watch things now. So that's my current thing I can watch. Before I have to start on the children's tea. And maybe sometimes my own, if they let me. Yeah. But no, I think that's all on Beetlejuice until our episode 2.0 when we watch Beetlejuice 2 and say, they've ruined it! They've ruined all my childhood dreams!
The CGI, I'm dumb.
Yeah, exactly. But we'll still have Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Still there. I'll take it away.
Okay then. So where can our lovely listeners find you then?
Oh, I'm on Instagram as Anna Maiko. I'm on Twitter as also Anna Maiko. You can find me on Facebook, which is facebook.com/MaikoEntertainment or facebook.com/RealHorror, I think, or just search Real Horror on Facebook and you'll find us. And that's my production company with Eve Oliver, who I'm sure you've all met and you're all in love with her. Everyone's in love with her. Everyone just meets her and falls in love. That's her superpower. Check out our campaign for Witch Trial, which is now in demand. You'll find on all of our social medias. I think Real Horror on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. I don't deal with that because I'm an old person who doesn't understand how things work. So Eve has been doing the TikToks. Don't worry. Not me going, is this on? Poking the screen. If you look on those socials, you can find our campaign trial for Witch Trial, which was successful. So we are now in demand, so you can still pick up a copy of the film or a role in the film or credit on the film or anything, copy of the script. Tell us what you want, we'll sort it out.
Yes, you can find this podcast on most listening platforms, Facebook, Instagram, and the Slash App. You can also help yourself to some Eco Roast coffee with the discount code coupon CM. And if you're interested for £3 a month, you can help out on Patreon and join watch parties, get a shout out, and suggest films and subject matters.
But now, what else are you doing? That
time.
Ha ha.